So I'm going to talk about scattering amplitudes. This is based on the paper. Here's the number, so you can check it out. Basically, quadratic gravity. So I think I'm going to spend some time like describing it, what it is, because it might not be the most popular thing, because it's a non-Lorentz invariant, a Lorentz violating theory. So this is a perturbative renormalizable metric QFT of gravity. So there is a caveat there that is only renormalizable in its projectable version, like strictly proven to be. And I'm going to define what's projectable later on. And this is the theory, this is the version I'm going to focus on. So there is an action, and as for any sensible QFT or any theory, you can always write it as like kinetic energy minus potential energy. And so the feature of this theory is that there is a coupling in the kinetic term, and it enters multiplicatively. So naively taking the limit lambda goes to infinity, so that coupling leads to some singular action. On the other hand, the renormalization group study of this theory shows that this is a very interesting limit, because there you have asymptotically free UV fixed points. So like basically the idea behind this project was to just check if this limit actually makes sense, because if it does, and it does, then you get a very well-behaved high theory at high energies. So you would solve quantum gravity if it weren't for the fact that it doesn't have Minkowski spacetime as its low energy phase, the vacuum. It might have something effectively looking like it, and I'm gonna say a few words about it at the end if I'll have time. So, but if we sort of brush this aside, and focus on the high energy, this is a very nice theory there. There is also a non-projectable version of the same theory. This is a more complicated. There are many more terms in the Lagrangian. And it's not like exactly proven to be renormalizable, although there are indication that it is. And it actually escapes all the constraints, all the bounds on the Lorentz violations at low energies. So it's like at low energies, it's also, it works. And yeah, basically what I'm doing now is just to figuring out these two things. So what is the vacuum for the projectable version, and proving the renormalizability of the non-projectable one. So I think these are the two most important questions that there are in this whole quadratic gravity business. But this project was about these amplitudes. So basically what we did is just took this action, BRST quantize it, so build the Hilbert space for the scattering states and scatter them using a computer, because doing it by hand is impossible. So some brave people in the 60s and the 80s did this thing for the GR by hand, and that was quite a fit. So here it's like, I don't think it's possible to do that. And so yeah, what we did is to just quantized it, found the wide identities for the amplitudes. So these are actually different from the ones that you usually get in the textbooks for the Young-Mills and for the GR. So we computed all these amplitudes, and we checked that this limit actually is fine, various checks. And yeah, basically, yeah, I think that's it. So a few words. So basically, I gotta formulate the theory first. So the idea is quite nice. You just say that your space-time you basically undo the Einstein. So you separate space and time into space and time. You postulate that at high energies, you have this different scaling of space and time. And this is inspired by the condensed matter systems. So you have those anisotropic crystals where you have sort of Lagrangians, and you have different number of spatial derivatives in, say, y direction and x direction. So here you do the same, only now with space and time, and at high energies. So at low energies you have the same scaling, but at high energies not. So of course that means you lose the diffeomorphism invariance. You still have the foliation diffeomorphisms. This is, well, you should think of it as a, you take your space-time, you foliate it, So what people usually do in numerical relativity, but here you sort of, you put more meaning to this foliation. You actually say, yeah, there is this preferred foliation of space-time. You no longer can arbitrarily like do diffeomorphisms there. You can only do diffeomorphisms within these leaves, and you can reparameterize your time. So natural language for this sort of thing is to ADM variables. So just like in the Hamiltonian formulation of GR, you write it in terms of this lapse, shift, and the three metric. And you just write the most general action that is compatible with all the stuff that you sort of impose, right? So these foliation diffeomorphisms and this anisotropic scaling. So this kind of looks like GR. So if you take lambda equals one and V equals, so you just throw away all this stuff and you leave these two terms, take it to one, you would get GR. But here, sort of, you go nuts and you do that. You also do not restrict to the lambda equals one. And you furthermore, so now you have a choice. So because you actually have, so because you see that your foliation diffeomorphisms, so you see that your time reparameterization leads to this transformation law for the lapse, you can only focus on n that is just a function of time, and this is consistent with this transformation law. So this is the projectability versus non-projectability. So you just say that you just focus on n that is equal to some function of time, and this is what defines projectability. And this drastically simplifies the theory, because now you no longer have anything in your potential except these terms. So non-projectability, where you n can be, so where your lapse field can be space dependent, you get another like 100 of terms, all involved in this n. So here you just forget about those. You focus on this case. And yeah, so from now on, this is just a Lagrangian, some fields, and you just go and quantize it. So you do the, well, Winder QFT volume 2. So you just say that, okay, I had these diffeomorphisms. Now I introduce ghosts. I promote those diffeomorphisms to these BRST transformations. I introduce gauge fixing. I introduce these ghosts. And this is standard textbook treatment. You don't really have to focus on all this formula here. So the idea is, well, this is the same idea as in Young-Mills. You fix the gauge, you introduce these ghosts, and then you say, okay, I have these physical degrees of freedom, I have these ghosts, I have this gauge degrees, and these ghosts cancel the gauge, and these ghosts cancel the gauge degrees of freedom in your computation. So you do the same thing here. You further, well, you got to introduce some background, like above which you actually consider the field excitations. So at high energies, you can go and get and take this flat background. You do this gauge fixing, you solve classical equations of motion, you obtain all this, well, all the sort of the modes you have. So here is the first main difference with the GR, because now you no longer only have the transverse degrees of freedom, you also have this scalar. This is because you broke one, well, this is because you broke diffeomorphisms, right? So you broke symmetry, you get extra degree of freedom. And well, on top of that, because you gauge fixed and introduce this ghost, you get this spurious degrees of freedom, and they all propagate with different speeds. So this is a difference with the relativistic theories. There you, like, all this, fictitious particles that you introduce, they all have the same relativistic dispersion relation. So, right, so you have this BRST symmetry. Well, Nerfa theorem says that you also have a charge corresponding to symmetry. You take this charge to be operator, just like we do in QFT. And this is basically what it means for this to, well, this is basically what it does, what this, how does this charge is actually acts on your, well, Hilbert space. And BRST quantization means that you take your Hilbert space as a vector space such that it is closed under this BRST charge. So this is your construction. This is what you define as a physical state. So something that is Q closed and two states that are differ that differ by something that is Q exact, that is Q acting on something, they are the same physical state actually. So there is an equivalence class of physical states. So this is all standard treatment of this sort of gauge theories. So, right. So we do that, and what we see already in, like, I'm going to show the example. So again, like, don't really try to follow what's going on here, but the idea is the same. So you have the symmetry, and basically this symmetry gives you a set of conditions on your amplitudes. So basically this, the punchline is this last formula here. And I'm just going to go directly to the example. So take your Young Mills already in gauge. So take Feynman gauge. So we have this gauge fixing term here. We have these ghosts. Usual definitions for the covariant derivatives and for the F tensor and structure constants and whatnot. You just do the normal QFT1 quantization. You impose canonical commutation relations. Figure out your commutators, and at the end of the day, you get this condition, and well, you recognize it as a usual ordered entity that says that if you take an amplitude with some external gluon, and you put this, and you take the polarization vector of this gluon to be collinear to its momentum, right? You just substitute the E by K, you should get zero. So this is your normal sort of, this is what gauge invariance means for the amplitudes. So for non-relativistic theories, you do the same, only now. So this is an example for the Young Mills, only now with this weird Lifshitz scaling with the anisotropy. So you have the Fs for the vector field AI, and you also have a separate one for the A0. You do the same quantization, you introduce gauge fixing term, gauge fixing function. Again, you solve classical equations of motion. You find the spectrum. Now, because you have a non-relativistic theory, the dispersion relations are different. And these ordered entities, they also become more complicated. So now they no longer tell you that you should take one amplitude, do something to it, and you would get zero. So now it's more like a relation between different amplitudes. So you have different fields, and these ordered entities tell you that certain linear combinations of those amplitudes vanish. So say here you take a longitudinal polarization of the AI field, and here you take the particle that is created by this curly A, which was A0, and this particular combination of the amplitudes should vanish. And you can do the same for the GR, and you can do the same in Herjava gravity. And this is what we do, and this is what we use to check that the amplitudes that we get with the help of computer actually, well, they actually correct, because, well, this is the check, basically. So, right, and then amplitudes. So, yeah, this is a brute force calculation. So we just take the vertices, we compute the propagators, and we just multiply them and sum. And yeah, so you can't do it by hand because all these interaction vertices, they involve like thousands of terms, and the propagators, they involve like dozens. So yeah, doing it by hand is impossible. Already in GR, yeah, I don't know how people did that, but somehow they did. But yeah, we use computer. But the result sort of similar to GR. So you get at the end a sum of the various contractions of polarization tensors corresponding to your external x and its momenta. Only now you have a richer structure because you have more higher derivative terms in your Lagrangian, so you get extra powers of momenta there. And well, the feature of GR is that at the end of the day, so you get 100 of these terms, and they all collapse neatly into something like Mandelstam S over 4 over STU. And there is a nice explanation why it happens, because you can get those GR amplitudes from string theory. So nothing like that here. You get a horrible mess. And So I'm not going to show you the amplitudes. I'm going to show you one, the simplest one. But yeah, so the important thing about them is that they are independent of those gauge parameters, and they satisfy word identities. So they're gauge invariant. And yeah. And the one limit where you can actually write them down is when you take these the kinematic regime of head-on collision. So you take two gravitons with the same energies that collide head-on, then you can write this amplitude in this form that it only depends on the overall energy and on the scattering angle. It is proportional to the gravitational constant, just like in GR. It scales as E squared, so the energy squared, also like in GR. Only now, so in GR there is a problem right there, because this kind of scaling is incompatible with unitarity. So if you use optical theorem, well, it breaks. So it's not the case for the for those non-relativistic theories. Here it's fine. So you can also compute cross-section. You can see that it also makes sense. So just like for all weakly coupled theories, you get this inverse momentum squared, and yeah, which is the Deprolet wavelength squared. And you also get the divergences. You also get them in relativistic theories. It's always the case when you have massless particles, you always have these collinear divergences. So this is a example. So this is what you get in GR, for example. So you take two right-handed gravitons into two right-handed gravitons, and this is basically the amplitudes. So it's going to be 1 over sine squared. So Hadronic gravity, that's it. So I don't know if anybody will ever use this amplitude, but it is computed. And yeah, so there are several nice things about those amplitudes, actually. So first of all, you get higher degree of this divergence. So because you had this k, because your dispersion relation is not like omega squared equals k squared, it's omega squared equals k to the sixth with some coupling, you have more sort of, yeah, you have a higher divergence degrees, you have a higher degree of divergence, and angular momentum conservation no longer completely sort of compensates for it. So for example, here you have all these amplitudes that involve helicity violation. And you get poles at non-zero angles, because now you no longer, so in GR and all relativistic theories, you cannot have one graviton decaying into two or one gluon. Here you can have it. So there's this old question of actually how you can even have any scattering states if they're not stable. So this is one of the problems with the S-matrix definition here. So yeah, so these amplitudes, there are many issues with them. I mean, in general with scattering amplitudes, there are issues already for Lorentz invariance theories. Yeah, because strictly speaking, you can only scatter something massive. So whenever you have already something massless, there are problems. But here on top of that, you have this unstable problem of instability. There is also a very nice thing that in your dispersion relations, you get this coupling constant, and under RG it actually, well, it changes, so there is an RG flow. So you have a dispersion relation that changes with scale, and yeah, this is like, nobody knows what to do with that. But yeah, so what we actually wanted from these amplitudes is just to check if they actually finite in this limit lambda goes to infinity, and that the theory makes sense actually in this limit, and this is the case. So you can see this, that it is actually finite in this limit and it's regular just by observing all the cancellation of all these terms. But also, well, there is a nice argument based on this Hubbard-Tsvetanovich transformation. So you can just integrate an extra field, and you can see that you can take this limit at the level of the Lagrangian, and you can just take this modified theory and see if it's well defined actually. And yeah, for that you basically need to compute some propagators, some two-point functions, and see if they're well behaved. And this is what we did and checked. So yeah, I think this is it. Yeah, basically what we did is to obtain these generalized void identities. Somehow we didn't find it anywhere in the literature, so it seems super easy, but yeah, and it was quite instructive. So we computed all these scattering amplitudes for gravitons and the scalar degrees of freedom, and we checked this limit. And yeah, basically this is, yeah, this shows that this theory, this particular version, projectable one, is good and nice at high energies. So the remaining question is, of course, the ground state. Yeah, and this is tricky. So the same scalar, this extra scalar that you get from the fact that you no longer have diffeomorphisms, so you have less symmetry, you get this scalar. So this scalar becomes unstable at low energies. And yeah, it's unclear, like, what does this, so how does this vacuum behaves? Where does this Minkowski space-time sort of destabilizes and goes to? So this is what I'm doing now. And yeah, and another thing is the renormalization properties of this more complicated non-projectable version. So yes, I think that's it. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Questions? Any questions? Yeah.
Are there limits on these parameters from current experiments? Or?
Yeah, not from on these news, but on the lambda, for example. And yeah, sort of the combinations of these news. And yeah, surprisingly, they escape all the bounds on Lorentz violation. So for this non-projectable version. Yeah. So yeah, it's actually phenomenologically, it's like completely viable, actually. So the reason why people usually discard this kind of theories is because you can have some amount of Lorentz violation in gravity. There are the limits are not like super strong, but they are super strong in the matter sector. So whenever you have coupling to the standard model, yeah, you don't want anything like no Lorentz violation there. But actually, it's quite natural to have super small Lorentz violation in this theory. So in that sense, it's fine. It escapes all the bounds. Yeah, there are constraints, but either. Yeah.
Very naive question. So I always heard that if you try to do the QFT of RG of GR, then you get normalizability. I guess here you said it is normalizable, so.
Yeah. So the thing is, so you assume it's kind of like the opposite. So yeah, in GR, you have your Riemann, right? And then you can sort of like add, like you can treat it as effective theory. You can like add extra terms, extra high derivative terms. But yeah, like you won't be able to like to EV complete it. So here you sort of say, because of this anisotropic scaling at high energies, you get this, so you get these six derivatives in your potential, right? And basically these six derivatives, these six derivatives, they transfer into propagators that have six powers of momenta here. And this basically makes your, so at high momenta, you have like propagators that go with energy very quickly. So it basically makes your theory normalizable. So yeah, it's quite nice. Yeah, that's how it works. Like the naive argument is that, yeah, super, super simple actually. Yeah. But of course, like computing bit of functions is, this is quite a task actually. Yeah. Even like with no matter, just gravity. Like it hasn't even been done with matter. Yeah, so it's a whole other problem. So yeah. Okay, yeah? Yes.
Can you get about the E squared scaling that violates unitarity?
If you just apply optical theorem, so it says that the imaginary part of your amplitude, it's related to the modulus squared. So yeah, in GR for this, you basically get your probabilities become larger than one, basically, so from this argument, if you have this scaling with energy, right? Because you increase the energy, your M gets like arbitrary high, and yeah, you just violate this optical theorem. So this kind of argument, it works in a bit different way for this non-relativistic business. So there you can escape, it doesn't really matter yet. It can grow as fast as E squared and won't violate the optical theorem, yeah. Okay. Yeah, thanks again, yeah.